On our morning show today, we have made connections with our special guest, Doug Bradley, by the miracle of the phones. I'm not sure what was going on, but he couldn't get through, and we're glad to have him now, the acclaimed author and advocate for veterans and veteran-related issues. Doug Bradley joins us from Madison. How are you doing today, Doug?
I'm trying to stay cool like everybody else, though, and it helps when you got good radio vibes like yours out there.
Appreciate the plug, absolutely. You'll be in our area with the topic of warrior songs in Spring Green on Thursday, September 7th. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I'm really looking forward to this because over the years, as you know, doing a lot of outreach with vets, that's just not Vietnam vets. And I've come across and engaged with younger vets, Iraq and Afghan vets, and Jason Moon is a fellow that I've connected with, and he and I have done a couple things together. Jason is the founder of the nonprofit organization called Warrior Songs. And what Jason does with Warrior Songs is he connects a veteran with a musician and helps the veteran to tell his or her story musically. It's just a wonderful, wonderful thing. You would appreciate this as a music lover yourself. And I'd encourage a lot of folks to come out. If they're really tired of hearing me and my story, which are always good and interesting, and include local folks like your own Jim Wonkendonk. But if you want to know a little bit more about Warrior Songs, and Jason himself is a musician, hear him play some music and tell some stories. I think it's going to be a great night. It's 7:30 to 9:30, Slowpoke at the Slowpoke Lounge on Jefferson Street, and we hope folks come out and share themselves with us that night and hear more about this incredible music.
Now, Jason is a veteran of the Iraq War. Has music been as influential and important to veterans of other wars?
It's a really good question, Phil. I think personally, yes. And the amazing thing now is you can probably listen to any song ever recorded in human history. And so that way, if you still want to connect with the swing musicians, the big band folks that kept you alive in World War II. I mean, we don't have many of those vets left, but my dad was a World War II vet, and I remember what his music was. Our great iconic music of the 60s, which I think we'll talk more about, best music ever, bar none. But, the soundtrack is not as shared in terms of commercial music, in terms of things that we would all share and hear. But the personal music, songs that Jason himself wrote, songs that he helped other veterans to put together to express their experience and maybe to get them to heal. That's always going to be important. I think music is essential to us as humans, not just in terms of pleasure and enjoyment, but also of a healing, a memory, connection. So it's there, and it's always going to be there. But I wouldn't say that they're like we listen to My Girl or, Ticket to Ride or We Got to Get Out of This Place in Vietnam. You're not going to find a soundtrack like that for Iraq and Afghan vets.
Well, your journey, Doug, came about after hearing veterans talk about their memories and experiences and tying that in with music, and that kind of set you on a journey, didn't it?
It sure did, Phil. I mean, when I was in the service, and you're probably too young, but some listeners are going, a crazy time, just a really messed up war from 64 to 75. And one thing the military realized, if they were to keep at that, and they had to keep the morale of the soldiers, the guys in the field that were doing the fighting and dying, they needed all the support they could get. Armed Forces Radio, guys like me writing the stories about them. I was a combat correspondent. All the various support mechanisms. And to keep our morale up, the Army gave us a lot of creature comforts. So not only 24/7 radio, some of which was good, some not so good, but you had it. And it got better as time went on. We had pirate radio stations sort of spring up, but you also had live acts at the clubs. You had music in the rear for guys like me, cassettes, real tape decks. Point being, music was really essential to our survival. And as you know, part of the shameful history of that war is guys came back one at a time. We lost the war. We were blamed. It was ugly. It was just not the way America should have been, I think, to people who do fight their wars for them. But when we started to encounter guys, you know, sometimes 20, 30, 35, 40 years after their service, they still had bottled it up. But we asked, what's your song? And wow, the floodgates opened, because nothing had been talked about. And in the course of telling a story about a song, whether it was about the Green Berets or Detroit City, Feel Like I'm Fixing to Die Rag, even by Country Joe, in the course of telling that story, in many cases, the men and women got home.
For those of us just civilians back here, you know, the songs had different meaning. You know, you talk about a song like My Girl or Ring of Fire or Leaving on a Jet Plane, you know, those were just good songs on the radio. But someone in Vietnam interpreted those and the lyrics a little bit differently, didn't they?
Well, Phil, that is such a great question, because that's what's marvelous about music. You know, you've got your own soundtrack. And in there is, you know, when Phil fell in love, or maybe when he fell out of love, when a parent died, when your child was born, when something wonderful happened. So we've got all those. So and you have this music in you, with you. You take that to Vietnam. You hear something that maybe, so you brought something with you. You hear that song in Vietnam. Now it's different. Or maybe you hear a new song in Vietnam. Like for me, you know, Elton John and Cat Stevens, George Harrison's All Things Must Pass came out. So those songs became different because I heard them first in Vietnam. Then I bring them home with me, have a new set of experiences to go with that song. But I always have those old memories that are triggered, because that's the way our brains work. So I'll give you a great example, because that's a wonderful question. Chain of Fools by Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul, hit after hit. I heard that song when I was in a fraternity house in a small college in West Virginia in 67. Great tune, easy to dance to, as they used to say on Dick Clark's bandstand. And, you know, it's another Aretha song about a guy, you know, not treating her right, like R-E-S-P-E-C-T. You know what? This guy's going to treat me like a fool. I'm done with this relationship. It's over. Well, yeah, that's a good takeaway. That's there. Well, if you're black in America and you hear that song at that time, it's the civil rights song, because there is no more powerful memory and ugly memory in the history of the African Americans in this country than Chains of Slavery. So Chain of Fools is a civil rights song for people who know it, because African-American folks get what Aretha's saying, different than what I'm hearing, but it's still the same song. Take it to Vietnam, and a couple of the guys we talked to, because, you know, we always talk about the Tet Offensive. I won't give a history of Vietnam here, but go read it, because it's pretty darn interesting and curious. But there was a thing called the Tet Offensive in 1968. North Vietnamese and Viet Cong sort of overrode every provincial capital in South Vietnam. We thought we were winning the war. We were at least holding our own. Well, what's going on? African-American soldiers, the turning point in the war for them was the assassination of Dr. King. And a lot of the black vets said to us, boy, if they couldn't protect our leader at home, what am I doing over here firing at this guy? I don't know what the fight's about. And one guy in particular talked about when he heard King was assassinated, wanted to hurt somebody, wanted to kill a white guy if he saw him. But he listened to Aretha's Chain of Fools, and he centered himself, and he calmed himself down. And there's a line in that song, you know, about the chain going to break. Well, then that becomes the chain of command, which is the way the Army operates. So one song, one great song, but multiple different layers of memory and experience. And so that is the beauty and power of music.
Indeed. Doug Bradley, our guest, I'm a real fan of your book, We Gotta Get Out of This Place, which came out in 2015. Rolling Stone magazine named it the best music book of that year, so quite a great accolade there. But there were so many poignant stories that I took from that, and the one that I think has always stuck with me is the story about the soldier who was hearing Leslie Gore on a reel-to-reel, and and Sunshine, Lollipops, and Roses, which is a minute-and-a-half pop song. And he's got this earworm stuck in his head, and then he has to go out into the jungle, and he's got this song in his head about sunshine, lollipops, and roses. Doesn't know if he's going to survive. I mean, I couldn't believe that when I read that part.
Yeah, and it was just amazing. So to have so many, you know, folks have those kinds of associations. Because, you know, I talk about music being, you know, almost omnipresent, yet, but not in the field. Silence is what you needed in the field, and that's why you're bringing up that story. So, because the guy, he had to be vigilant. He had to be attentive. You know, is that a twig I hear over here, or is that somebody moving? You know, do I hear somebody lighting a match or a cigarette? And so, he said, Leslie Gore, not a great Leslie Gore song, stuck in his head. And we had more than one guy mention moments like that. It's okay. Yeah, we had silence in the field. Yeah, we had to. But doggone it, sometimes we couldn't get the music out of our heads.
Armed Forces Radio carried you through. And, of course, we saw Hollywood portray that with Adrian Cronauer's story with Robin Williams. Was that anywhere close to accurate?
Well, close in the sense that he was a groundbreaker and that music was essential because, you know, this was 18, 19, 20-year-old kids who, you know, hard scrabble. This is working-class kids, fortunate son, you know. It wasn't the members of Congress. It wasn't the elites that were fighting this war. It was guys like you and me and Jim Wonkendonk. So the accuracy in terms of understanding who that, being of that generation and understanding how music was in their DNA and essential, yes, that's right. Now, a lot of that story fabricated Hollywood, you know, et cetera. The funny thing is, Phil, because we interviewed a bunch of AFE and DJs, you remember from having read the book, that we had to get the king. I mean, Cronauer was the trendsetter, so we had to get him in the book. Well, when we reached out to Cronauer, who was about as far right as Robin Williams was far left, neither of them is with us anymore, but he had done very well. You know, the movie, the book, all the residual sales. He made a lot of money, Cronauer did, at the adaptation. So he used that money to go back and get a law degree, and then he went on the staff of Dick Cheney in the White House. I mean, he was waging war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he liked it. So, but still, this is a book about his impact on GIs and AFA and DJs. So we reached out to him. His agent comes back to us, because Craig, my co-author, was chair of Afro-American Studies Department at UW-Madison at the time. And the word we got back from Cronauer's agent was he didn't want to be interviewed by two guys from the People's Republic of Madison. So, I mean, it's like, well, this book's about music, buddy. It's not about Madison politics. It was really kind of crazy. He blew us off. The good thing was there was so much about him in the public record that we could use. So, sure, he's in the book because he was essential in that way. The funny thing is, do you know who the DJ was that was on the Dawn Buster show after Adrian Cronauer?
No, I don't think I do.
Pat Sajak.
Is that right? Wow, that's a great trivia question.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. You got a trivia question now.
Oh, that's great. Wheel of Fortune guy.
Yep, that's him.
My goodness. We're talking with Doug Bradley here. He'll be in the area September 7th, Thursday in Spring Green, 7:30 until 9:30 that night. Doug, how many books have you written on the subject?
Three, Phil. You know, it's so funny. You think of 1 year of your life, 365 days in Vietnam, 2 years in the military, would not change your life forever. It does. I mean, I think that's probably the story of any veteran. Who served in any of these wars or just in service in particular. And so I struggled with something for about 40 years to get out because people didn't know the story about life in the rear. It's not to say we were any braver or, you know, any more patriotic than the guys in the field. But what people don't know, it's because all the movies are about combat, is that for every guy in the field, there were about six of us, seven of us in the rear. There are 500,000 combat troops, 2.5 million support troops in the history of the 3 million who served in Vietnam. And so I thought maybe somebody should write something about what guys in the rear were dealing with, you know, because it wasn't kill or be killed every day. So I wrote a book called DEROS Vietnam. It's an acronym. Military loves acronyms. DEROS, which means date for estimated return from overseas. So your DEROS date was sacrosanct. You knew when you got to Vietnam, knock on wood, you make it through 365 days or 13-month tours for the Marines, you were going to get home on your DEROS date. So I did a collection of, it's what they call now sort of autobiographical fiction. Some of the stuff happened, some didn't, but it needed to become a good story. But a lot of it's about experience in the rear in Vietnam. And then, of course, we've got to get out of this place, which, you know, it's probably going to be in my tombstone. How many people get Rolling Stone Book of the Year? I mean, total surprise and honor. And then I wrote a follow-up to that because, you know, a lot of what we were doing was basically what Craig knew from his music studies on call and response. You know, we say to somebody, what's your song? The response is, like you said, My Girl, Leaving on a Jet Plane, you know, Leslie Gore, These Boots Are Made for Walking, whatever. The response to We Got to Get Out of This Place is another book I wrote called Who'll Stop the Rain. And the cover of that, by the way, is a piece of art by our own Jim Wonkendonk. And in that, I'm talking about what we saw over about 100 presentations we made in 2 years, where audiences were just huge and just focused, but also honest and centered. And the music did a way of taking away all that divisiveness about Vietnam. People, Vietnam vets and protesters and others in between, shared, listened, were respectful of one another, welcomed the vets home. So I wrote that book, Who'll Stop the Rain, as a follow-up. And I think maybe I'll stop writing about Vietnam.
You know, one song that, when I was first in radio, I kind of always hesitated to play was Country Joe's Feel Like I'm Fixing to Die Rag, because I kind of felt like maybe it was disrespectful to those in Vietnam. But come to find out by reading your books that was a favorite in Vietnam, wasn't it?
It's one of those quirky things. Again, Phil, what you were saying before when you talked about, you know, what you listen to and how the song and the changes. And when we met Country Joe McDonald at the BART station in San Francisco, we went out to interview him. He picked us up. We got off the subway, and the first thing he said to us, he says, I'm a veteran first and a hippie second. Well, who knew that Joe McDonald had been in the service? I didn't. And it changes the whole thing, and especially if you listen to Joe. And one thing that soldiers will know, and I think anybody in high-stress jobs, is a thing called gallows humor. And that is, you know, dark, ugly, biting humor, but it's a way to break that tension, because you are in maybe one of the worst situations you've been in your life, and you need laughter, and it's what they call gallows humor. And that's how Joe intended that song. You know, the calliope, the kazoos, the craziness, those ugly lines about, you know, whoopee, we're all going to die, be the first one on your block to have your boy come. I mean, he meant that as satiric, as really ultimate in gallows humor. Well, a lot of vets, a lot of soldiers got that. America didn't. Joe still gets hate mail to this day about that song because of those lyrics. And it was misunderstood. But, you know, I mean, he had something to do with that. Woodstock had something to do with that. But, again, popularity. Guys used to make their troops march to that. 1, 2, 3. It's cadence, you know. It's crazy. But so was Vietnam, and so was the landscape at that time.
Well, John Fogerty, you know, Who'll Stop the Rain, Creedence Clearwater, and Fortunate Son, and some of those, he also was a military veteran, wasn't he?
Yeah, luckily for John, he talks in our book, and he was interviewed by Craig at length for a oral history he did of Creedence years ago, that he was in the reserves, but he wasn't in the safe reserves. He could have been activated because he didn't have like a college degree behind him or any path back to ROTC or a school. And I think it was a hearing thing. He came home one day and there was a letter on his doorstep because he never picked up his mail, and it sort of fallen out of his mailbox. And he picked it up and it said, you know what, you're going to get discharged. Doug Clifford, also a member of CCR, was in the Merchant Marine, another way to serve and maybe not get to Vietnam. It could have been all those guys. Like, it could have been Springsteen, any rock and roll musician at the time. Archie Bell and the Drells, what happened to them? Well, Archie Bell got drafted, you know. This is what happened in that era. So guys like Creedence, especially working-class kids, understood who was fighting the war, really the first guys to say, and I think it was because of Clifford and Fogerty's experience and understanding, you know, you can hate this war, but don't hate the soldier. You know, it's not his or her fault.
Right.
And that we carried that on to Iraq and Afghanistan, I think, in spades. But Creedence, those were the first guys to get it, and I think it's because they understood what the experience was like.
Yeah, Archie Bell, if I remember right, he was overseas when his record was number one, and the guys he was serving with didn't believe him. He's, that's me singing on the radio.
You got it. I have a great story from a guy who was with, what people don't remember is the Question Mark and the Mysterians were a Latino band from Michigan whose parents were migrant workers. So they were Hispanic workers, probably up from Mexico, that worked on farms and orchards in UP of Michigan. And a friend of mine was telling me one time, the organ player, it wasn't Question Mark, I can't remember his real name, but we were hearing that song because you heard that song in Vietnam, and he turned to the other guy, he says, "You hear that organ?" The guy says, "Yeah." He says, "That's me." So Question Mark and the Mysterians are part of 1910 Fruit Gum Company, guys like that. They were in Vietnam.
Yeah, amazing. We'll come back and more. You can stick with us for a little while longer, Doug.
Oh, I'd love to, Phil. This is fun.
All right. We'll have more on the other side here on The Morning Show from WRCO. Our morning show on WRCO and WRCE Radio gives you a great opportunity to learn about an upcoming event in Spring Green, Thursday, September 7th, 7:30 until 9:30. Our guest today, Doug Bradley, will be there, and he'll be joined by Iraq War veteran Jason Moon for a special night that night. We're getting a little sneak preview on the air today, and Doug joins us by phone. Doug, music is certainly, it's a healing thing. It's an amazing thing how the brain works, and you and I were talking off the air about the recent passing of Tony Bennett and how that guy could still sing right up until the end.
Boy, could he ever. I just wrote a piece for the website Medium, if anybody wants to go there and check it out. And I think the title of it was He Kept Our Hearts in San Francisco, because a lot of the early guys that went off to Vietnam went off in ships. It was not a great voyage. It took almost a month, several weeks, but they would go under the Golden Gate Bridge when they would be leaving, and I Left My Heart in San Francisco was one of those songs that really, really stayed with them. And Tony Bennett, of course, was a World War II vet, had some horrendous experiences, Battle of the Bulge, at the liberation of Dachau. He said war was the worst thing that he'd ever seen. He wanted to come back and just sing his heart out and sort of forget about that stuff. But, later in his life, Tony, as some of your listeners might recall from that special he did with Lady Gaga, he had really severe dementia and Alzheimer's, and to the point where he couldn't recognize his wife. He didn't know who she was, the person with him. And I'm sure folks who have had a loved one that's had Alzheimer's has had that experience. But Tony's pianist would come into his apartment twice a week, and Tony would nail a 90-minute set list. Fly Me to the Moon, I Left My Heart in San Francisco, All of Me, he would just go through a play, and then he's done. He hits it, he nails it, and then he turns and says, "Who are you?" And that sort of, some of that happened in that Lady Gaga special. And the amazing thing now, Phil, what's going on is that they can do so much great work with brain research, and they put dyes in there and they watch what happens. And what scientists and researchers have realized is that music is where memory lives. Those parts of the brain are connected and they trigger. So you might not, recognize a face because sight is different than sound. But if you hear a song, you make an association. And, my mom lived to be 99, my father-in-law to 98. And toward the end, when they maybe weren't registering anything, I play music for them, and you could see the smile. You could see them light up. They were someplace with that song. And again, like you said, whether it's healing, whether it's sustaining, whether it's sharing, whether it's joy, but music has that enormous power.
It definitely does. The length of the Vietnam War, Doug, we're talking 64 through 75. Music really changed. So somebody that went early, might have been thinking about Tony Bennett's Left My Heart in San Francisco. Maybe by the end, they were singing Alice Cooper. I mean, there's quite a variance in music, right?
Well, that's what's really funny, because you would have some of these guys that would go back for multiple tours. We had a guy in the book, a guy named Marty Heuer. Kid from upstate Wisconsin, as soon as he, the way to get out of Antigo was to get in the service. A lot of guys did that. So, this is like just post-Korean War, and he turns 18. He's getting in. So he's in Vietnam, and he gets there with an M14 and a guitar when he gets off the boat. And because he was an officer, he was a helicopter pilot, but he was an officer. They called themselves the High Priced Help, and they became this folk music group that used to play for other soldiers. They would adapt songs to their surroundings, but they were four officers. They called themselves the High Priced Help. And, you know, all that early folk music stuff, you know, not maybe the protest stuff, but even, they even played some of that, was their repertoire. Marty comes back on a second tour. He's there like in the late 60s, and it's like nobody's sitting around playing a guitar, singing, you know, Where Have All the Flowers Gone. Guys are trying to play, you know, Purple Haze or something else. And it was like, for Marty, that was that cacophony. You know, so he says, you know, we got to get out of this place. It wasn't my anthem. You know, mine was I Left My Heart. But that's because, you know, he was a different soldier of a different era. He brought up differently. And as you said, you know, that landscape changed. There were songs that were censored on, yeah, you wouldn't hear Ruby Tate, I'll Take Your Love to Town on AFEN. But we heard it because people sent it to us. You know, we could get the music. So all that music was accessible. We had it. And sure as heck changed. America was changing. You know, when I, you know, you had the Beach Boys singing Fun, 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 then it's Good Vibrations. What in the heck happened to the Beatles? You know? But that was because the times they were changing, as Dylan would remind us. And really, everything was up for grabs. Music was right there to tether us, both to our friends, our families, our communities, our fellow soldiers, but also to show us how things were changing, what was going on. This is a different world.
Was it reel-to-reel tapes? Was that kind of the normal format in Vietnam, or was it cassettes in by the time you got in?
The beauty about reel-to-reel tapes is, you know, you could, especially if you taped at the slowest speed, you could get 2 or 3 hours of music on there. So no getting up, getting down, you know, turning the record over or plugging in the disc, the little disc tape, the diskette. You know, who's got 2 or 3 hours to do it? When we were back in the Hooch and we were staying up late and maybe we're done with AFVN and guys were coming back off guard duty and we had something we wanted to talk about, we just wanted to hang out, that's what we would have. Somebody would bring theirs into the Hooch. Sometimes we'd go back up to our air-conditioned office at night just to put our tapes on and type letters home to our loved ones. But, you know, you didn't always have that option. So you took it where you got it. If it's a cover band, if it's a troubadour, if it's somebody on the pirate band on the radio, grab that music when you get it, brother.
No doubt. Certainly good stuff. We're talking with Doug Bradley here and talking about the book, We Gotta Get Out of This Place, and all the items that he has written during his time as author. And you mentioned your song. Was it Elton John, Cat Stevens, somewhere in that area?
Yeah, I mean, it was funny. That was a different sound. But that started to get play just as I was leaving. I was there 70 and 71. And like I said, all the music was accessible, and people would send us stuff from home. They would send us tapes. They would send us the direct albums. You'd get the stuff in the PX. Guys would go to Taipei, and, you know, they would have bootleg albums. It'd be the same album. Volunteers by the Jefferson Airplane, you know. That guy comes back, and it was 99 cents in Taipei, you know, because they had bootlegged the album, and you get them there. So we had all the music, and one of the guys who went to Taipei for me came back with T for a Tillerman, the first Cat Stevens album, and the Elton John album, just called Elton John, him looking like a little kid on the cover. So again, you know, the soundscape always changing, something always new, but there were things that kind of always, those songs that would tug at your heart, that would remind you of the person that you were missing back home. And that's why things like Dock of the Bay and Detroit City and My Girl, you know, those songs, Say a Little Prayer, you know, that great song by Hal David and Burt Bacharach that was intended for the soldiers in Vietnam that both Dionne Warwick and Aretha Franklin did. So, you know, you always have that song or songs that kept you connected, but you always had everything else too that was making you think and wonder and turn around and say, yeah, as the line in the song goes, something's happening here.
Mm-hmm. You've taught in the classroom at the college level as well. Do students of today, do they take as much interest in that, you know, in that part of the past, or is it more those of us that live through it?
You know, it's a little of both, but when you've got a course, it's in the syllabus at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, one of the great schools in the world, you're going to get some, eyes on that and some interest. And so the crazy thing was for us, Greg and I taught that for 8 years on the campus, and because he was a full professor at Madison, and he put, basically a departmental home for the class, the course, and it was called Integrated Liberal Studies, which is one of those marvelous things. It's everything from, science and history and biology and journalism and music and African-American studies, all, it's a multidisciplinary. And so we taught the course through the Integrated Liberal Studies Department. And the great thing was we would have a class. At one semester, we had 100 students, and that was way too much to handle. But normally we would have 50 to 60. And so maybe half the class would be freshmen. Half of the other undergrad, would be mainly juniors and seniors. And then the beauty of a public university is if you're 62 years of age and older, you can, with the permission of the professor, you can audit a class. You can sit in on a class on campus for free. So we have this great melange in front of us of, 50 kids who were, some of them were born like after 9/11, who, for all intents and purposes for them, Vietnam could be the Peloponnesian War, but they know all the music because their parents or their grandparents listen to it. It's great stuff. So they come in knowing Dylan and Hendrix and the Doors and the Beatles and the Temptations. They know it. And now we can use music to connect that to a veteran's story and then start to explain to them about the war. The other half of the class, we had the most auditors, I think, of any class. We'd have 20 or 30 senior citizens, half of whom were Vietnam vets, half of whom had been anti-war protesters. And so what a rich learning environment. Music to use in education as a way for, understanding and knowledge. And then these young 18 to 22-year-olds and these old folks engaging around a topic or a song or a veteran's presentation, I got to say, for me, as you can tell, I'm excited about it. It was one of the richest learning environments I've ever been a part of. And it's just too bad that we both retired and left and we never went back and taught the class again because those were wonderful, wonderful moments. And you could never predict what was going to happen.
War Music and Healing, Talk and Performance, the subject of Warrior Songs, coming up in Spring Green Thursday, September 7th. It's a unique opportunity, and I'm guessing you probably open it up for some discussion during those sessions too, don't you, Doug?
Absolutely. People always have something to share. The beauty of this, Phil, as you know, is that, some of the stuff's been bottled up. I mean, and music triggers something. And we've had, invariably, and that's part of the reason for the basis of that third book, Who'll Stop the Rain, is that somebody would stand up and share something they've never talked about since they've been home. Because they know people there will care and listen and respect what they have to say. I encourage them, spouses, loved ones, it means so a lot of people serving, a lot of Wisconsinites serve. Encourage folks to come out that night and just share what's on their mind. It could be a great place to listen and to share, as well as to hear some great music.
Lastly, we got to get out of this place, a title of your 2015 book. And again, that's kind of the number one. We counted down the songs in your book one time on our Those Were the Days program, but that song that song means a lot to a lot of folks, doesn't it?
It's another one of those crazy stories, Sean, as you know from liking music the way you do. Susie Wild and Barry Mann, who co-wrote that song, were like Carol King and Jerry Goffin and Neil Diamond, these young Jewish kids in the Brill Building in New York City cranking out hit after hit after hit for the Shirelles and the Ronettes and, the Drifters, all the great groups that made all that great song, that especially that R&B stuff that came out in the late 50s, early 60s. So they're cranking out songs, and they cranked out the song. And I want to spoil I'm going to have a nice little surprise for the folks there that come out on September 7th. And the teaser will be there was an original version of that song that I'm going to play that night that probably people have never heard. But that song was not intended for the Animals and the rendition that they made. But the sheet music for that somehow ended over in England. And Alan Klein and Mickey Most, who were running the Animals and other groups in England, found it, got it, handed it to these hard work, hard scrabble kids from Newcastle, and they looked at it and said, this is us. You know, we don't want to be like our daddies in bed and die, and we want to get out of here. We want to get out of this place that we're in and go to London and become big rock and roll stars. And so the song spoke to them, but they never thought it had anything to do with Vietnam because the song came out in 65. Well, you know, lo and behold, it became the Vietnam Vets anthem. Because I told you before, I talked about the hero state, you know, that you're holding, got your arm around somebody who's singing that song with you at the top of their lungs because they're going to get out of there too. That's what we hope for. Not every one of us made it home, which is sad. Those that got home never got home. That's a sad legacy of war, but thank God for the music.
Indeed, Doug. It's always a pleasure. We'll have to have you back and maybe in person one of these days. We'll have you come up and be a guest DJ one day.
So I'd love to do that, and keep up your good work. It's it's radio, it's music, it's connecting. So keep it going.
Absolutely. We'll keep on trying. Doug Bradley joining us, and he'll be at the Slowpoke Lounge and Cabaret in Spring Green, 7:30 to 9:30, Thursday, September 7th. We hope you'll stop out and see him that night.